Om Sahanavavatu Sahanav Bhunaktu Sahavidyan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Good. Welcome back. We are continuing our study at the beginning of chapter 8. Brahmachara Yoga, and we'll introduce it a little bit, but let's begin with some chanting, beginning with verse 5. Repeat after me. Excuse me. Antakale chamam eva, antakale chamam. Smaran muktva kalevaram, smaran muktva kale. Yah prayati samad bhavam, yah prayati samad. Yati nasyatra samshayah, yati nasyatra sam. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, yam yam vapi smaram. Tyajatyante kalevaram, tyajatyante kalevaram. Tam tam he vaiti kaunteya, tam tam he vaiti. Sada tad bhava bhavitaha, sada tad bhava. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, tasmat sarveshu. Mamanusmara yudhyacha, mamanusmara yudhyacha. Mayarpitamano buddhir, mayarpitamano. Mame vaishyasya samshayaha, mame vaishyasya. Abhyasa yoga yuktena, abhyasa yoga. Chetasananya gamina, chetasananya gamina. Paramam purusham divyam, paramam purusham. Yati parthanu chintayan, yati parthanu. Kavim purana manushasitaram, kavim purana manushasita. Anoraniyam samanusmarit yaha, anoraniyam samanusmarit. Sarvasya dhataram achintya rupam, sarvasya dhataram achintya. Aditya varnam tamasaf parastat, aditya varnam tamasaf. Prayana kale manasachalena, prayana kale manas. Bhaktya yukto yoga balena chaiva, bhaktya yukto yoga. Bhruvor madhye pranamavesha samyaka, bhruvor madhye pranamavesha. Satam param purushamupaiti divyam, satam param purushamupaiti. Yadaksharam veda vido varanti, yadaksharam veda vido. Vishanti yadyata yo vitaragaha, vishanti yadachanto brahmacharyam charanti, yadachanto brahma tatte param sangrahena pravakshe, tatte param sangrahena pravakshe. Sarvadvarani samyamya, sarvadvarani. Manohridi nirudhyacha, manohridi nirudhyacha. Murdhyadhayatmana pranam, murdhyadhayatmana. Astato yoga dharanam, astato yoga dharanam. Om ityekaksharam brahma, om ityekaksharam. Vyaharan mamanusmaran, vyaharan maman. Yah prayati tyajan deham, yah prayati tyajan. Sayati paramam gatim, sayati param.
Ananya cheta satatam, ananya cheta. Yo mam smarati netyashah, yo mam smarati. Tasyaham sulabah partha, tasyaham sulabah. Nitya yuktasya yoginah, nitya yuktasya yoginah.
Very good. So, in our last class, we began a study of this chapter 8, Akshara Brahma Yoga, which began in a somewhat unusual way, in that Arjuna asked this very complicated multi-part question of Sri Krishna, a very philosophical question. And Sri Krishna chose, instead of focusing on each and every element of his very complicated philosophical question, Sri Krishna chose to focus his response mostly on the very last part of the question. He answered the first parts very quickly, as we saw in the last class, and then the rest of the chapter is pretty much an answer to the last part of Arjuna's question, which had to do with prayana kala, the time of death. So Arjuna says, at the time of death, Arjuna's question was, at the time of death, O Krishna, how are we to remember you? And that was really the jumping off point for the rest of the material in this chapter. In the last class, we had a discussion based on this verse 6, which we saw in our last class, about the fact that yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajati ante kale varam tam tam eva Aiti Kaunteya Saratad Bhava Bhavitaha. Yam Yam Bhavam Smaran. Whatever you remember at the end of your life, Tam Tam Eva Aiti, to that very bhava, to that very state one goes. And we had a lengthy discussion about a very simple-minded interpretation of this verse that says that whatever is your last thought before you die determines the condition of your rebirth. It's a very mechanical interpretation, and we described in some at some length how that's not a proper interpretation of this verse at all. Bhava, after all, does not mean thought; it means a condition. So, a better translation of this verse would be: whatever is the condition of your mind at the time of death will determine the state unto which you go in your next life. And then we concluded also in a prior class that the condition of your mind depends on what? It really depends on how you've lived your entire life. And that, I think, is a very, very important teaching. The way we live our lives determines the way we will die. If you want to have a good death, lead a good life. And if you don't live a good life, you can be pretty sure you're not going to have a good death. These are some very fundamental principles. Now, it happens that many people do hold, I won't say many people, some people do hold to this very literal interpretation of this verse, which I think is not particularly helpful, because if you take this verse very literally, it suggests that a so-called deathbed conversion will wipe out a lifetime of sin. Do you think so? Someone who has lived a horribly sinful life, their whole lifetime, and then in their very last moments, they repent. Oh, and why are they repenting? They're repenting not because they feel guilty about all the terrible things they've done in their lifetimes. They're repenting because they're afraid of what will happen if they don't repent. What will happen to them in their next life. So therefore, in their last dying moments, they say, oh God, I'm so sorry I did all these things. Please, my mind and heart is with you. Ram, ram, ram. And they repent. Gone. I mean, certainly that's better than not repenting. But let's be very clear that it doesn't erase the consequences of a lifetime of adharmic behavior. And merely uttering the word Ram with your dying breath doesn't magically change everything. It's not a magic mantra to take Bhagavan's name with your dying breath. Now, there was related to this discussion, before we proceed, there was a good question that came in our discussion. Person says, grew up in a traditional family in South India. When a person was dying, his close relatives would gather in his room and sing bhajan so that he could sing peacefully with the thought of God's name in his mind. Absolutely. This is a tradition done all over India and perhaps all over the world. That is, when someone is ready to die, we consider it helpful to create a spiritual environment for that person as they die. And that spiritual environment would most certainly include the chanting of mantras or the recitation of Vedas or Bhagavad Gita or the singing of bhajans. Very, very helpful. Let's be clear, though, why it's being done. If you think that it's being done so that the last thing the person hears is God's name, then with that very mechanical interpretation you're relying on, we're back to the same problem as before. So then, if we admit that it's not mechanically true, that whatever happens to be your last thought will determine where you go after death, if that's not true, then how shall we understand this tradition of creating a spiritual environment, of chanting prayers, or even directly into the ear of a dying person? This is frequently done, and it's a wonderful tradition. If there's no guarantee of what will be the last thought, why do it? Oh my gosh. Dying cannot be easy for most people. And whatever we can do to make that death a better experience, whatever we can do to remove fear, whatever we can do to create a sense of comfort, of security, whatever we can do to create that very sacred environment with the support of family and friends, absolutely we must do that. We want to do that. So it's a very important way of supporting a dying person in their final moments to create that prayerful environment. And how I really liked when I see this done in a hospital. At home, of course, we always do it, but to see it done in a hospital, I think is very special. You know, the fact that we would gather in a hospital room and create that environment, even though hospital rooms are not ideal environments by any a stretch of the imagination. But it can be done. You create that very warm, spiritual, sacred environment. What a wonderful way to support a dear one in their final days or minutes. So very important tradition. Let's just not assume, though, that the purpose of doing that is to ensure that the dying person's very last thought will be about God. We're going to have this discussion a little bit more in several verses, but let me just add this because we didn't have time for it in the prior class. And that is, we may have very little control over what's in our mind in our final moments. How do we know? How much control will we have? We don't know. We don't even know how lucid we'll be. You know, if we die at the age of 100, chances are we might be suffering from dementia. What will be the condition of our mind if we live to be a very old age? Or if we're suffering from great pain, doctors generally administer powerful pain relievers, including narcotics, which can make your mind very dull and fuzzy. So dull and fuzzy to the point where you're in a half-sleep condition. And in that half-sleep condition, at least there's no pain, but there's also not much control over the condition of your mind. So let's just acknowledge just the reality of the situation, that in our last moments, we may not have control over exactly what's happening in our mind. But one thing we know is that the way we've lived our lives determines how we will end our life. It's how we have formed our minds and hearts through living a life of sadhana. Then all of that, the sadhana, the phala, the fruits of that spiritual practice, and Sri Krishna is going to say this in several verses, the fruits of your spiritual practice will definitely bless you at the time of death. A very important point. Okay, with that introduction, we're ready to resume our verses here. What did we... Yeah, we haven't seen verse 7 yet, right? Let's start there. Okay. Verse 7.
Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, tasmat sarveshu, ma manusmara yudhyacha, ma manusmara yudhyacha, mai arpitamano buddhir, mai arpitamano, ma me vaishyasya samshayaha, ma me vaishyasya.
Tasmat, therefore, sarveshu kaleshu, at sarva kala, at all times, mam anusmara, mam, me, anusmara, remember, at all times remember me. Why at all times? I thought just at the, isn't it the idea of this at the time of death? Well, remember where this is being spoken. Where is this dialogue taking place? On a battlefield? Tell me, on a battlefield, do you think it's possible to predict when you're going to die? You could die at any moment. That's the truth of the battlefield. That's the truth of any battlefield, including battlefields like Interstate 287 and US 80, US 78, all of these major highways. You don't know. In fact, you pull out on any road, you know this. You don't know. Any moment someone could come. Any moment we could die. And not just at somebody else's hand, even in our bodies. We don't know. There's a little clot forming and it's ready to travel to the place where it can do the maximum damage. We don't know. It could happen any moment. With that in mind, Sri Krishna says, sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, mam anusmara, remember me. Again, if we reject this mechanical interpretation of whatever is your accidentally happens to be your last thought, rejecting that interpretation, it still means you should always think of God. Of course you should, because that's how we live a good life. That's how we live a life of sadhana. That's how we prepare our minds and hearts. And when our minds and hearts are prepared by a life of sadhana, then we'll be in good shape whenever we die. That would be, I think, a much better interpretation of such verses. So Sri Krishna here addresses Arjuna, of course, and says, sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, ma manusmara, remember me, yudhya cha, and fight. Arjuna is going to be out there on the battlefield. There's a very subtle point here, not very subtle, but something that you have to think about a little bit. We generally think of prayer as something we do in front of an altar or at home when you're sitting quietly, you know, to think of God. Ma manusmara, Sri Krishna says, remember me. We think of prayer as an activity set apart from worldly activities. But what is Sri Krishna's instruction to Arjuna here? Sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, ma manusmara yudhyacha. At all times, remember me and fight. Which means, even while engaged in battle, Arjuna is expected to remember Lord. You might think, how is that possible? Well, wait a minute. Most of you were here when we were studying Karma Yoga in chapters 2, 3, 4, and 5. What did we understand? Karma Yoga is a perspective where you're always reflecting on Ishvara's role in your life and in a very pragmatic way. To how would Arjuna remember God while engaged in battle? So Arjuna is this great archer, warrior. So he pulls back his arrow, which he'll be doing shortly after the Bhagavad Gita takes place, after the battle begins. So he'll pull back that arrow, but before he releases it, Arjuna knows that once he releases it, the path of that arrow is in Ishvara's hands. It's karma yoga. That is a way of maintaining a prayerful attitude, even on a battlefield. And if a prayerful attitude can be maintained on a battlefield, then a prayerful attitude possibly can be maintained in your life, at home, at work, or whatever situation you're in. This is one of the basic teachings of the entire Bhagavad Gita. So what Sri Krishna says here is not unreasonable. Sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, mam anusmara yudhyacha, remember me and fight, or to paraphrase it, at all times, let us appreciate Ishvara's presence in our lives while we're engaged in our worldly activities. Is that a good paraphrase? I think that captures the sense of the first half of the verse. And then he concludes in the second half, Mayi arpita mano buddhihi mam eva eshasi asamshayaha. Eshasi. So the translation is wrong. It says, one will certainly reach me. Eshasi. You will certainly reach me. By the way, you can blame the translator. Sitting right here. So the second half, Mayi, in me, arpita mano buddhihi, one whose buddhi, intellect, and manas, mind, are arpita, dedicated, devoted. Devoted where? Mayi, in me, Sri Krishna says. One whose mind and intellect are devoted to me, for that person. Actually, that person is Arjuna. He's addressing Arjuna. Mame, O Arjuna, if your mind and intellect are devoted to me, mameva eshyasi. Eshyasi, you will reach. Mameva, you will reach me. Asamshayaha, certainly. And now, with the way we've been interpreting these verses, it makes perfect sense. If you dedicate your whole life to establishing this relationship with Ishvara, a relationship which is constant. Sarveshu kaleshu. Remember our discussion on karma yoga, where we said that karma yoga is a full-time spiritual practice. We had a lengthy discussion about how if your spiritual practice extends to an hour or two each day, as good as that sounds, it's woefully inadequate because the goal we seek is such a remarkable goal. Such a remarkable goal is going to require not several hours a day of effort. It's definitely going to require full-time effort. Sarveshu kaleshu, all times. How do we make that full-time effort in spiritual growth? The one-word answer is karma yoga. By the way, karma yoga is really one word, right? You put two words together, you make a compound word, karma yoga. So, karma yoga is a set of teachings that allows us to have this appreciation of Ishvara's presence in our lives at all times, so we maintain a prayerful attitude at all times throughout our lives. And in this context, if we maintain that spiritual perspective throughout our lives, if our whole lives are a process of spiritual growth, then at the time of death, we have nothing to worry about. All right. Then, now things get a little bit more challenging. Abhyasa yoga yuktena, abhyasa yoga. Chetasa nanya gamina, chetasa nanya gam. Paramam purusham divyam, paramam purusham. Yati parthanu chintayan, yati partha. Yeah, this is not too bad. Actually, the difficult one is actually verse 10, which we'll come to shortly. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa na anyagamina paramam purusham divyam yati partha anuchintayan. You have to find the verb to get the meaning of a verse. Yati. Partha, O Arjuna, yati. One reaches. Yati. One reaches what? Paramam purusham divyam. One reaches paramam purusham, the supreme being, God. Paramam purusham divyam, that divinity we call Ishvara or God. Yati. One reaches anuchintayan, with this contemplation, anuchintayan. Not exactly remembering, but rather a contemplation or reflection. The anuchintayan can mean remembering, and before we saw expressions like anusmaran, but not remembering in a very traditional sense. Remembering means to remember some past event. And that's not exactly what we're talking about, not remembering a past event, but rather reflecting. Reflecting on your relationship with the God of the cosmos, with Ishvara. So anuchintayan, reflecting on, contemplating on that paramam purusham divyam, that supreme divine being, yati, one reaches that being. Now, the question is how to reflect, how to contemplate on God, not only throughout life, but perhaps at the end of one's life as well, how to reflect on God, how to contemplate Ishvara. And the first half of the verse gives some very specific instructions. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa na anyagamina. You should reflect chetasa with your mind, with a mind, chetasa, with a mind which is na anyagamina, with a mind that doesn't go anywhere else, anyagami. Anyagami means you want to go left, and the person says, I'm going right. You say, I want to go back, person says, I'm going forward. That's anyagami, one who goes in a different direction. But here, Sri Krishna is describing a mind which is anyagami, a mind which doesn't go in any other direction except towards Ishvara. Now, once again, does that mean that you have to quit your job and make sure that you go to a temple every day? Wait a minute. We just got done talking about the role of karma yoga. The role of karma yoga is to instruct us in such a way that we can continually reflect on Ishvara's presence in our lives while we're engaged in any and all activities. Any and all activities includes right now. Let's be a little concrete. So, for example, right now, as I'm teaching you, I'm very cognizant of the fact that whatever I'm teaching you comes from Ishvara. In fact, in a very literal sense, comes from Sri Krishna. So whatever I'm teaching you comes from God. And perhaps even more importantly, whatever skills in communication I have comes from Ishvara. It all comes from Ishvara. And I guess I'm well enough trained that whenever I'm teaching, I'm very cognizant of that fact. You can equally be cognizant of that fact as you sit in this lecture hall listening to this pravachan. You can reflect on the fact that you're sitting here is because of Ishvara. In fact, in a very obvious sense, the fact that we have lived this long in life and avoided many situations in which we could have died, we don't know how many times we might have lost our lives. But certainly there were times when our lives could have been lost and somehow we escaped the Yama Mukha, we escaped the jaws of death somehow, and here we sit. How is it that thus far in life we have escaped the jaws of death and we can sit here enjoying this opportunity? This is a blessing of Ishvara. This is something we can be
cognizant of. We can reflect on that. We can be aware of it. We can consider this moment and every moment of our lives to be a gift of Ishvara. And in this way, your chetas, your mind, becomes anyagami. Your mind doesn't go anywhere else, which means your mind stays fixed on Ishvara, appreciating Ishvara's blessings in your life each and every moment. Each and every moment means each and every moment. There's a beautiful passage actually in the Christian Bible. I think it's where Paul says that we should pray without ceasing. He means it. Pray without ceasing. How to pray without ceasing? That's what we're talking about. By appreciating each moment of our life is a gift. All right. And then Sri Krishna gives some more specific advice about how to do that. Abhyasa yoga yuktena. He said, by equipping yourself with abhyasa yoga, with the practice of abhyasa. Abhyasa can be translated as practice, but then you say you have to translate it the practice of practice. That doesn't sound very good. Abhyasa yoga, don't translate it as a practice of practice. Abhyasa, the literal meaning is repetition. The practice of repetition. The practice of repetition means what? Well, in the context of meditation, the practice of repetition means bringing your mind back again and again and again. Abhyasa yoga, the practice of repetition, means bringing our minds back to Ishvara again and again and again. Let me share with you how Sri Shankaracharya explains this. He says, Mayi chitta samarta chitta samarpana vishaya bhutaha. He says it's a practice of dedicating your mind to Ishvara, making Ishvara the focal point of your mind. Ekasmin tula prat yaya pravritti lakshanaha, and it's a condition characterized by when each of your thoughts, are ekasmin tulya, each of your thoughts are similarly focused on the object, and here the object happens to be Ishvara, a condition where each of your thoughts is directed towards God, and Vilakshana pratyaya anantarataha abhyasaha anantarataha, without any interruption, vilakshana pratyaya, a distracting thought. So in the absence of any distracting thoughts, to have all of your thoughts focused on Ishvara. Or as Paul said in the Bible, to pray without ceasing. Or as Sri Krishna explains in the practice of Karma Yoga, it means to constantly appreciate Ishvara's presence in your life. Ishvara's presence in a very concrete manner, if you remember our discussions on Karma Yoga. Ishvara's presence as Karma Pala Data, as the giver of the fruits of action. Like the example I gave before, Arjuna pulls back the bowstring. Arjuna knows once he lets go of that bowstring, his work is done, and wherever that arrow goes is in hands of Ishvara. This is to recognize Ishvara as Karma Pala Data, as the giver of the fruits of our actions. And what an important teaching. One of the central teachings of Karma Yoga is to understand Karmani Eva Adhikaraha. Ma paleshu kadachana. That famous verse in chapter 2 that everyone quotes and few people seem to understand. And that is to say that we have deliberate conscious control over our actions. We have no ability to determine the results of our actions. We can choose our actions. We cannot choose the results because the results are in Ishvara's hands. And if that understanding is with us all the time, whatever we do in every decision we take and in every action we commit, suppose we reflect on, I'm about to do this. I can choose the proper action, but once I perform this action, the results will come from Ishvara's hands. The results are in Ishvara's hands. If you were to reflect continually on that throughout each day, you would be praying without ceasing, you would be performing karma yoga, and you would be doing what Sri Krishna says here, abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa na anyagamina. You would be mam anuchintayan. You would be thinking about God with a mind that was abhyasa yoga yukta, a mind that was trained to do abhyasa yoga, the practice of repetition, the practice of bringing your mind to appreciate Ishvara again and again and again. Now, again and again and again does not mean every Saturday morning. Every Saturday morning is good, but you know very well that's not what's being talked about here. Sarveshu kaleshu. Not just Saturday mornings. This is a practice meant for our whole lives. So, enough said. Now you notice we have the shift of meter with the next three verses. Shift of meter is there for several reasons. One is it allows the communication of more complex subject matter. You have more syllables per line to use, so you can have a little bit more complexity. Also, it's very dramatic, and often it's used in the Bhagavad Gita to draw attention to some very important material, and we see that here. Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Kavim Puranam Anushasit Anoraniyam Samanusmaretyah Anoraniyam Samanusmaretyah Sarvasya Dhataram Achintya Rupam Sarvasya Dhataram Achintya Aditya Varnam Tamasah Parastat Aditya Varnam Tamasah Parastat. Good. Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Anoho Aniyam Samanusmarit Yaha. Yaha. One who Anusmarit. Literally remembers, but again, memory suggests remembering of a past event, and that's not what we're discussing here. We're talking about a reflection, a very active form of reflection on Ishvara, on the God of the cosmos. So, yaha anusmarit, one who reflects, one who contemplates, one who contemplates on whom, on what. And here we see a very beautiful poetic expression. So, who is that Lord upon whom we meditate? Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram. Kavi usually means poet. Certainly doesn't mean poet here. So kavi, while kavi often means poet, kavi can also mean, it has several meanings. It can mean someone who's enlightened. It can mean someone who's just really smart. In this case, it means someone who is sarvajna, is how Sri Shankara glosses it. Sarvajna means omniscient, all-knowing. So to anusmaret yaha, one who contemplates that omniscient one, that sarvajna, that kavi, that omniscient God of the cosmos. In what sense is Ishvara omniscient? And we talked about this once before. Let's just reflect on this before we go on. When we say Ishvara is omniscient, it doesn't mean the one who's always watching you, the one who's waiting to see if you make any mistakes. This is a very traditional I was raised in a Christian family, and as a child, this is what I was taught. God is omniscient means what? God is always watching you. And if God is always watching you, it means watch out. You better be careful, because even behind closed doors, God is watching you. So therefore, don't commit any sins, don't do anything wrong. God is always watching you. Not what it means at all. Because it turns God into some kind of peeping Tom. What a ridiculous... Come on. We need a more mature way of understanding the God of the cosmos. So sarvajna means the one who possesses all knowledge. When we translate it in English as omniscient, it's subject to misinterpretation. If you stay with the Sanskrit terminology, kavi here is glossed. The word gloss means when you supply one word for another word. So Sri Shankaracharya glosses kavi, which means he gives a synonym for kavi. And the synonym he gives is sarvajnaha. Sarvajna means the possessor of all knowledge. In what sense is Ishvara the possessor of all knowledge? Ishvara is a source of the intelligence because of which the universe exists. Doesn't that make perfect sense? The universe exists because of Ishvara. We live not in a random universe, but in a highly intelligent, well-ordered universe. The intelligence because of which atoms stick together instead of disintegrating into little bits and pieces. The intelligence because of which the organs in your body function as well as they do. That intelligent order of the cosmos, that intelligence is Ishvara's intelligence. When we say Ishvara is omniscient or sarvajna, it really refers to Ishvara as the source of all intelligence, sarvajna. All right. So that one is kavim, anusmaret yaha, one who reflects on that source of all intelligence, the one who is puranam. Purana can mean old, but here, old means older than old. Generally, we determine our age by our birthday, right? So you know when you know the date of your birth, at least you think you know the date of your birth. How do you know? You have to trust your mother that she's actually given the correct date. You have no way of knowing on your own, so you believe whatever is that date. So based on the date of your birth, you determine your age. Suppose you have no birthday. Suppose there was no beginning. How old? That's the meaning of puranam in this context. Purana doesn't merely mean old. It can mean old. But here it truly means the one who is beginningless. So that one who is kavim, who is the source of all intelligence, that one who is puranam, beginningless, the one who is the anushasitaram, anushasitra, the one who's in control, anushasitra, the one who controls the cosmos. In what sense does Ishvara control the universe? Tell me, you notice that gravity always works in the same direction? Things always fall down. Can you imagine if things would fall in different directions? If I drop my glasses, sometimes they'd go up, sometimes they'd go left, sometimes they'd go right. But gravity always works in the same direction. We could say, truly speaking, that that's evidence that Ishvara is in control. Due to Ishvara's will, due to Ishvara's intelligence, due to Ishvara's intelligent natural order, things continue. Fortunately, you and I can change our minds from time to time. Imagine Ishvara changing his mind. Then the glasses could go anywhere when I drop them. Ishvara doesn't change its mind, not fickle like a human being. That's why Ishvara is Ishvara and we are human beings. So, this is Anushasitaram, the one who controls the universe but controls the universe not like a fickle human being. The one who controls the universe by endowing the universe with this intelligent order, laws of nature. And the one who is Anoho Aniyan. We think of Ishwara as being vast. True. But simultaneously, Anoho Aniyan, smaller than small, smaller than an atom, smaller than anything, which means the fundamental stuff out of which the universe is fashioned. You know, modern science will analyze matter in so many ways, you know, atoms broken down into to electrons and protons, broken down into quarks, some of you know, broken down further possibly into things called strings, and we don't know. Even scientists admit that they don't really know. So when Sri Krishna says here, Anoho Aniyan, smaller than small, he's referring to the fundamental stuff out of which the universe is fashioned. So that one, Yaha Anusmaret, one who reflects on that one, who is a source of intelligence, who is unborn, who controls the universe, who is smaller than small, meaning the reality because of which everything exists. The one who is Sarvasya Dhataram. Dhataram can have several meanings, can mean creator. And I did translate it here as creator. But when I checked Sri Shankara's commentary, Sri Shankara takes it more in the sense of karma pala data. Sarvasya Dhataram means the one who determines the results for every action. Kind of like what we were just talking about. When I let go of the glasses, who determines that they fall down? Ishvara. In the same way, when we are engaged in any activity, we make the effort, but the one who actually creates the result, that's what that Karmani Eva Adhikaraha Te verse is all about. We create the action. We do not create the result. We do the action. Ishvara gives the result. And that's what is referred to here. Sarvasya Dhataram. The one who creates the result. The one who is the karma paladatta, the giver of the fruits of all actions. Anusmaret yaha, one who reflects on that one, sarvasya dhataram, as a giver of the fruits of all actions, the one who is achintya rupam, one whose rupam, whose form is achintya, unimaginable. Ishvara is not a particular form or being that one can perceive. Therefore, achintya rupam. The one who is Aditya Varnam, the one who is shining like the sun, the one who is like the color of the sun. Not Aditya Varnam, he just said Achintya Rupam, so one whose form is unimaginable, then Aditya Varnam doesn't mean he's like the sun, it means shining like the sun. Sun is a great metaphor because the sun shines on its own. The sun is a source of illumination. Most things that we know are not sources of illumination. You know I'm sitting here before you. You know I'm sitting here. Why? Not because I shine. I don't shine. But fortunately, I'm a good reflector of light. So the light strikes my body and reflects, and that's why you can see me. I'm not a source of light. I'm a reflector of light. The sun, however, source of light. And that's where the metaphor comes. The one who shines like the sun is the one who is a source of light, and we could even go so far as to say the one who is the source of the light of consciousness, Chaitanya. So that one, Aditya Varnam, the one who shines like the sun, who is Tamasaha Parastat, the one who is beyond darkness, shining. By the way, this comes right out of the Veda. This expression, Aditya Varnam, Tamasaha Parastat. Many of you were here this morning when you were chanting Purusha Suktam. Isn't that where these lines, that expression comes from? It's a direct quotation from the Purusha Suktam. So we saw that this morning. Also, the sentence stops here at the end of the verse in the middle of the sentence. The sentence continues in the next verse. So this verse simply says, Yaha anusmaret, one who reflects upon Ishvara in all the ways discussed in this verse. What about that person? Yaha anusmaret, one who reflects in that way. Well, that's why we'll see the next verse, the second half of the sentence. Prayana kale manasa chalena, prayana kale manasa bhaktya yukto yoga balena chaiva, bhaktya yukto yoga balena bruvor madhye pranamavesha samyaka, bruvor madhye pranamavesha samyaka, satam param purushamupaiti nityam divyam, satam param purushamupaiti divyam. Okay. Yaha anusmaret was in a prior verse, and then the sentence finishes at the bottom. Saha, saha tam param purusham upaiti. Saha upaiti. Saha, that person. What person? Yaha anusmaret from the prior verse, one who reflects upon Ishvara in this way. Saha upaiti. That person reaches. Reaches what? Tam param purusham, that supreme being, divyam, that divine supreme being. How? And here we get some very specific instructions, and I referred earlier to some instructions that would be more hard to follow. So far the instructions we have is remember God your entire life, reflect upon Ishvara throughout your life, that will prepare you for death. Now we're going to get some more specific kinds of instructions here. What should you do at the time of prayana kale, at the time of death, prayana kale, at the time of death, manasa achalena, with a mind which is achalena, unwavering. At the time of death, with an unwavering mind. Now, in the introduction, we already discussed that we may or may not have much control over our minds at the time of death. So here Sri Krishna is giving, excuse me, these would be, how can we can call them advanced instruction? Advanced instruction for an advanced yogi, which I am not an advanced yogi. I don't practice hours and hours and hours of meditation and asana and pranayama every day. I wouldn't consider myself an advanced yogi. But here we find instructions for such an advanced yogi, a yogi whose mind is so well trained that even at the time of death, prayana kale, even then, the manas, the mind, will be achala, unmoving, unwavering. How can that be achieved? Bhaktya, through a life of devotion. Bhaktya yuktaha, that person who is endowed with devotion, and that applies for our whole life. Endowed with devotion means having lived a life of sadhana, always appreciating Ishvara's presence in our lives. This is what it means to be endowed with devotion. But here comes the big term. Bhaktya yuktaha, endowed with devotion, but not only devotion. Yuktaha, endowed with yoga balena cha. Eva, indeed. Yuktaha, yoga balena, endowed with the bala, the strength of yoga. Yoga bala, the strength of yoga. What is the strength of yoga? Here, Sri Shankaracharya explains. Yoga balam, samadhija samskara prachaya jiva janita. Samadhija samskara prachaya janita chitta samskara. No, chitta stariya lakshanam, yoga balam. Yoga balam is the chitta stariya, the stability of the mind, which is samskara janita, prachaya samskara janita, which is born of the accumulation of samskaras, which are samadhija, the result of the practice of samadhi. So let me explain what Sri Shankara has said here. If you spend your entire life not merely meditating, but regularly going deeply into samadhi, which means every day going deeply into a condition of samadhi, by doing so, you will create an accumulation of samskaras, impressions in your mind, which are so strong that it creates a sthairyam, a condition of stability, even at the time of death. You and I may not have the ability to control our minds at the time of death, but presumably a great yogi could. So the instruction we see in this verse is not necessarily meant for everyone. We have to understand that every verse in this Bhagavad Gita is not meant for everyone. After all, Sri Krishna tells Arjuna to go and kill his family members. Do you think you should take that advice as well? If it's good advice for Arjuna, it's good for you. Arjuna was told to kill his family members, so you should kill your family. Come on. So we have to understand that whatever is taught here, any advice given has to be understood in context. So the advice given, the instruction given in this verse is really an instruction meant for an advanced yogi. One who, as Sri Shankara explains, one who through the strength of an intense meditation practice, how intense? Intense enough to bring about samadhi regularly, not now and then, but every time you go into meditation, you become deeply absorbed. By doing that day after day after day, the mind becomes so incredibly well trained that a stability can be maintained even up to one's final breath. This is the ability that a great yogi would have. And for that great yogi, now we're going to see how would that great yogi die? Not like you and I will die. How will the great yogi die? Bhruvoho madhye pranam avesha samyaka. So pranam avesha, taking one's life force, prana, and avesha, placing it, entering it into a particular location, which is bhruvoho madhye, in between the eyebrows. Taking one's life energy and concentrating it between, this is what you're doing in your last moments, right? And Sri Shankara gives some more instructions here. He says, Hridaya pundarike vashikritya, controlling your consciousness in your heart, chittam, tataha, and after that, urdvagaminya nadhya, bhumija, Bhumi Jaya Chakrena Bhruvoho Madhye Pranamavesha. What does it mean to place the prana between the eyebrows? Sri Shankara explains it in terms of the system of chakras. He uses the expression here. He says, Urdhvagaminya Nadhya, through the system of nadis, nerves, which go upwards. They go upwards from this so-called Muladhara chakra at the base of the spine, and it goes through. There's a series of six chakras culminating in the Ajna chakra here. Seventh is actually not a chakra. So there's a series of six chakras from the Muladhara at the base of the spine. By the way, if you haven't heard this stuff before, don't worry about it. It's a little obscure. But there is a very elaborate yogic teaching that presents this model of the nadis in the body and some central nadis, three central nadis, with a series of chakras or energy centers, starting with that Muladhara chakra at the base of the spine. And here Shankara explains, moving that prana upwards through the chakras. In fact, he says, Bhumi Jaya Kramena. Bhumi Jaya, this is a little obscure language. Bhumi here refers to the chakra. Bhumi Jaya, breaking through the chakras. Kramena, sequentially. Now, If any of you understand this series of this practice of Kundalini Yoga, it's a very elaborate practice. It requires years and years of visualization of each of these chakras and focusing your attention and moving energy through the system of chakras gradually. Here, Sri Krishna is saying that this practice is done in your last moments. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be able to do that in my last moments. I have a suspicion my last moments could be with some morphine or something, and I'll just drift off to sleep. I don't know. I have no idea, but perhaps I'll just drift off to sleep. I'm certainly not going to be moving energy through the sequence of chakras in my body and placing all of that energy in my forehead so that, according to the yogic texts, so that your prana leaves your body through the Sahasrara, through the Brahmarandra, through the so-called opening at the top of the channel of nadis. All this very esoteric Kundalini stuff, if you haven't heard this stuff before, don't worry about it. It's a little esoteric. But that's what Sri Krishna is making reference to here. And so he says in a prior verse, one who reflects on Ishvara in the way that was discussed, he says here in this verse 10, saha param purushamu paiti, that person reaches the Supreme Being. But now he's, based on the earlier lines, he's clearly now talking about the advanced yogi. And that advanced yogi is someone who, even at the time of death, can control his or her mind completely and go through this incredible process. I have no doubt that some yogis are capable of doing so. I have no doubt that I'm not capable of doing so. And it's okay. Again, this is an instruction for an advanced yogi. What is the instruction for the rest of us? He said it very clear. Mam anusmara. The instruction for the rest of us is throughout our lives to appreciate Ishvara's presence, Ishvara's hand, as it were, in our lives, to constantly reflect on Ishvara, to live a life of karma yoga, to live a life of bhakti, devotion, to live a life of sadhana, of spiritual practice. If we live a life of spiritual practice, we will be blessed by that spiritual practice not only throughout our lives, each day of our life will be blessed by the benefits of our spiritual practice, and then when we reach the end of our lives, we'll also be blessed by that spiritual practice. It will bless us at the time of death. Okay. We will continue in our next class. Some announcements for today. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Gita at Work study group. Meets at 11 o'clock. You're all welcome. Gita at Work study group at 11. And I'll be conducting a satsang question-answer period tomorrow at 6. 11 o'clock, Gita at Work, tomorrow at 6, satsang question-answer. 2 weeks from today, we're celebrating Janmashtami. So instead of our usual Saturday programs, we'll have a wonderful celebration. Just to give you a heads up, as they say, 2 weeks from today, there's also a sign-up sheet on the counter. You can sign up to bring some food for prasad. Today, after class, we have a bit more gardening to do, a few more weeds that have to be pulled up. If we could have maybe a dozen of you stay back after class and help pull some weeds out. We have some food also to share with you, some lunch, so you can spend an hour pulling weeds and have some lunch together. The weather is fairly nice today. Library will be open after class. And one thing I should mention, when we conclude our programs on Saturday mornings, we end, of course, with arati. And we have 3 arati trays. And I notice that sometimes people are a little bit hesitant to go up and offer the arati, which means sometimes the arati isn't really offered properly. So I would just like to encourage you, if you like to do that, don't be shy. Come up to the front of the room. And I think the usual convention is no rule, but the usual convention is for one verse, you offer the arati tray. and then you give it to someone else. So sometimes not enough people come forward. So please don't be shy. Please come forward and offer aarti. It's a very nice way to end our program, which we'll do.